Hello all, welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report for this May 15th, 2025. Thanks so much for joining us. In studio today, we have our great friend from UW Extension, Janelle Weir. Janelle, good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me, of course.
I tell you every time you're in how much I enjoy talking with you and love hanging out. I learn stuff all the time, and I know I'm not alone, not even just me and my dad, but so many other people out there do. And you got a great topic for us today.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So the state plant pathologist, Dr. Brian Huddleston, just recently put together a fact sheet of plant problems to keep your eye out for 2025. And so I'm just kind of taking his lead and taking his information and sharing it with my local community. So today we're going to talk about, like I said, plant problems that, you know, because of the way things have happened in the previous years, as well as, you know, what the forecast is looking like for this summer, what we should be keeping our eye out for. But before we jump into specific plant diseases, I just want to take a second and talk a little bit about this thing called the disease triangle, okay? So for a disease to happen, for a disease to express itself, you need three things, okay? So this is why I'm saying it's a disease triangle. You need three different sides. Now, for the first side, you need some sort of plant that is genetically susceptible to the disease, okay? So not all plants are susceptible to all diseases, right? So we've got our diseases that, you know, needs to have a real specific genetics, right? Next, we have to have the pathogen. We've got to have that disease-causing organism. If that disease-causing organism isn't in the environment, well, the disease isn't going to show up, right? And then finally, that last side of the triangle is a favorable environment. So if you think about it, you know, we don't have powdery mildew in the middle of winter, right? Mm-hmm. It's because it's cold, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to have really, really humid and warm conditions for powdery mildew. So for each one of these diseases, we have to have real specific situations or environmental conditions for them to pop up. So as we talk about each one of these diseases, and I kind of go through how do you go about, you know, curing this disease, I want you to kind of just keep it thinking about how that relates to that disease triangle, because I'm going to either mention, you know, plant disease resistant varieties, right? That's really getting at the susceptible genetics, right? Or I'm going to mention pruning for better airflow. That's how we're changing the environment and making it so it's not so favorable, right? Or what's their other side? I might mention, hey, prune out the disease. Well, that would be getting rid of the pathogen, right?
Right, okay, right? All right.
So just kind of thinking about that as we go through these different diseases and how, when I talk about how to get rid of them.
I don't know if a lot of people did this, but certainly during the pandemic, I got into researching and finding out more and more about these virus hunters and the people that go around the world, you know, trying to find actual viruses before they turn into a pandemic and some of these things, and doing some of the most important work in our planet right now. And I went down a rabbit hole with this and still have to a time. And I immediately hear a very similar triangle with the human beings and diseases as plants and diseases. It's just, I think it helps a little bit of understanding of what we're going to get into here.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of that stuff, you know, I mean, it's biological, so it relates, you know, across different across different species.
It also just speaks to, I think, for me at least, how much we have in common with the planet and our in nature in general and everything. I think that there's a lot more connection, a lot more parallels than we realize sometimes. As sometimes we as a society get farther and farther away from the dirt, I think that we forget that we're a part of this planet and we're a part of this stuff, and it, you know, what affects it affects us.
We are nature. Nature's in our built environments for sure.
Yeah. So, Janelle, where do you want to start with such a big topic?
Yeah, why don't we talk about scab? So scab is going to affect your apples, your crab apples, and your pear plants. You know, we had a lot, last year was a super, super rainy spring and early summer, right? And so, I mean, really, really wet. And so last year we had a lot of scab problems. I would expect, because we had so much scab last year, this year for it to continue to be a problem. Now, how would you know that you've got scab? Well, number one, you're growing either an apple, crab apple, or a pear, right? Okay. So it's not going to affect your cherry tree or anything else. It's how do you know? Well, you're going to notice these little feathery edge spots on leaves, and then and the fruits too. And then eventually, if you had an apple or a crab apple that really lost, you know, many or most of its leaves last year, probably had scab. So, what do you do? Well, one thing to know, this particular disease, I love it when I have good news when it comes to plant diseases. This one's not lethal. This one's mostly a cosmetic disease. And now, don't get me wrong, if you've got an ornamental crab apple in your front yard and it drops its leaves in the middle of summer every year, you know, that's even if I tell you it's not lethal, you're still not happy about it, right? It still doesn't look good. But it truly is mostly a cosmetic disease. It can become a problem if year after year after year it's losing its leaves. That's going to stress the tree out.
Take a toll.
So, you know, from first year, you know, you have scab, don't panic. 4 years in a row of having serious scab, well, then I think we need to step in and do something.
So you just get a can of scab gone, right? Everything's better. I don't know what I'm talking about.
So what I would do is I would, number one, do a good fall cleanup. In the fall, you want to get rid of as many of those leaves as possible. See, the reason why the scab keeps coming back from 1 year to the next is because of it overwinters on that leaf material. So if you get rid of all of those dead leaves, there's less of the pathogen available to reinfect the plant the next year.
Sometimes you say things and it's like, oh, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah. It makes such sense, yes.
And the other thing I would suggest is really, in right around the best time to do this would have been back right around St. Patrick's Day, pruning that tree and opening up the canopy so that way it'll it will dry out more quickly after the rain. And this makes it so that way, the environment's not as fantastic for it to, even if the pathogen is around, we need that environment to be favorable for the disease. So that combination of getting rid of those leaves and then opening up that canopy is going to make it so that way it's much less likely to happen. Now, if you have had a serious defoliation from your plants for, say, 4 years in a row, and now we're looking at, you know, I'm concerned about the overall stress of my tree and it becoming susceptible to other diseases or insect issues, then it may be worthwhile to look into applying a fungicide preventatively. But first, let's make sure that we're taking care of these other things first.
What about leaf spots and some of that? That can be another one that I think is I don't want to say common, but one that we kind of notice.
Well, yeah, and especially right around in our area. So this is this in particular, I'm thinking about Septoria leaf spot on lilac trees. So the past few years in the Wisconsin Rapids area, in particular, Wisconsin Rapids, Nakusa, right around there. The lilacs have really taken a toll. You know, you'll notice probably, depending on the year, late July into August, all of a sudden the lilacs are just completely defoliating, right? And last year, they even managed to come back. I think some of them bloomed again, but many of them refoliated, grew back their leaves, and then boom, lost their leaves a second time too. Yeah.
Wow. So I don't know if I knew that that could happen.
Yeah, yeah. So they got reinfected with the disease. Across the state last year, just because of the weather conditions, the whole state saw really bad septoria on lilacs. But I want to say the issue has been particularly bad in our area, at least going back 4 years or so. So what are we going to do about this? Well, good news is, again, mostly a cosmetic issue, except when it keeps happening over and over and over again. So same as before, we want to do a good fall cleanup, get rid of those leaves. And if your leaves are falling off of your lilac in the middle of summer, get out there and rake then, okay? Get it. You want to get those leaves. You don't want any of those that plant material to overwinter. And then pruning for that airflow. That's really going to be the best thing that you can do. A lot of people will, you know, in, say, September, they'll call me and tell me that their lilacs are all dried up and dying and what to do about it then. At that point, fungicides, they're not going to work. They're not curative. Mm. They only work preventatively. So if you wait until your trees or your shrub is all brown and dried up, it's already too late.
It's good to know. You know, again, I think one of the things that I'm taking as a positive with a lot of this stuff is the tree is not dead. It's not, you know, they're salvageable. I that doesn't feel like the right term I want to use, but there's still something there that can be helped.
Oh, that's, you know, well, often if you just don't do anything, it'll be fine, right? Hmm. So I have an office colleague up in Wausau who just earlier this week mentioned to me, Janelle, you know what? My lilac tree, it's all budded out and it's going to bloom, you know? And she came to me last year. Lilacs were all looking dead. What could she do? And I told her, you know, exactly what I just said, mm-hmm. you know, do a good, you know, raking up the leaves right now in the spring or in the late winter, you know, prune them for airflow. I don't think she did the pruning for airflow. Oh. I'm not even sure if she did any raking, but they're going to be just fine. Now, if she didn't prune for airflow and if she didn't do the raking, then later on this summer, the tree or the shrub might be reinfected by the disease, you know, but it'll leaf out again.
Hmm. It's just interesting. Just very, very interesting. Where would you like to go next, Joe?
Let's talk about aster yellows. Mm-hmm. So aster yellows, there's a bunch of perennial plants that get aster yellows. And the way that you're going to know that you have them is you're going to have this kind of weird stunted and distorted growth. And the leaves can either be yellow or orange or purple in color. And your flowers almost look like they have leaves growing out of them. Mm. So the unfortunate thing about aster yellows is what we're dealing with here is, I think it's a virus or phytoplasma. Mm. The unfortunate thing is there's no cure. If your purple coneflowers have aster yellows, there's no cure. The only thing that you can do is pull them out and you remove as much of that plant material as possible. The way that plants get aster yellows is through leaf hoppers, and it's because leaf hoppers don't brush their teeth from plant to plant. Mm. And so they will have the disease, they'll have the phytoplasm in their mouth structures, I guess. And then they share it as they go from one plant to the next. Now, here's the thing, because I would strongly recommend having your plants, if you suspect that you've got aster yellows, I would strongly recommend having that checked out and verified that that's what you're dealing with, because aster yellows looks real similar to herbicide damage and also to a very specific type of mite damage. Now, the thing about the herbicide and the mite damage is you can prune both of those out and they're going to be perfectly fine.
Okay.
So you might, you know, I would, you know, suggest, hey, let's double check and before you rip out all of your plants, let's double check and make sure that it's truly this lethal disease and not, you know, just a real bad bug infection.
That's a great, and it's going to save you not only time and effort and all these things, but, you know, maybe the plant that you love, that until we can get tree hoppers, toothbrushes. That's really what we should really be focusing on. Or maybe mouthwash is better. That's ridiculous. Toothbrushes. Mouthwash is what we should be doing. We are speaking with UW Extension's Janelle Weir right now. And Janelle, this next one, you can say. No, I'm sorry. I was going to try to set you up, and I'm like, oh, no.
we're going to talk about gymnosporangi rusts.
Gymnosporangi. Spanish.
So I just kind of like open up my mouth and launch at it. Yeah, I don't think I can slow down.
I'm overthinking it. Yeah.
Gymnosporangium. Yeah. See, now you got me.
I'm so sorry. That's on me. But this is another one that I think is a great topic.
So this one, actually, as I was kind of going through and thinking about all of these, I was thinking about you in particular with this one, because I think you're going to really dig this. Mm, okay? Mm,
okay.
So these are, these really, really, really show just how boring human beings are. Like, utterly boring we are, right? Because there's organisms that do, let me back up for a second. We're born alive, you know, babies. I mean, yes, you know, there's definitely some maturing that happens, but overall, babies don't look that different from adult humans, right? Mm-hmm. You still have one head, two arms, two legs, right?
Like the basics, yeah.
Right? But then you think about the other organisms, right? Like, think about, say, butterflies, right? So you've got, they start off as eggs, they turn into caterpillars, and then they go through this complete metamorphosis where they disintegrate and then reform as a butterfly, right? Yeah. Like, that's super cool.
It's just amazing. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The gymnosporangiums are kind of in that more interesting, complex life cycle. Ooh. All right. Now, these guys require both junipers and then somebody in the apple family to complete their life cycle. So they start off with junipers, right? And what they do is they kind of form this really bright orange gelatinous mass, right? I mean, it's like an orange jelly that forms on junipers, right? And then later, and that's going to be earlier in the growing season. And then now here's the thing. For these gymnosporangium rusts to complete their life cycle, there needs to be somebody in the apple family nearby. Mm. Otherwise, they are eternally preteens. Mm. They don't get to complete their life cycle. Mm. But if there is a member of the apple family nearby, they'll infect the apple leaves. And the apple leaves will get these like little tiny spots that will slowly turn more orange or a bright orangish color, or literally the color of rust.
Right? I feel like I've seen that before.
Yeah. Well, if you've seen it before, then there's got to be a juniper nearby for it to complete its life cycle. Mm. So it won't, if there's just apples, they won't complete their life cycle. So how do we deal with this? Well, good news is it's pretty much just a cosmetic disease. I've got an apple at home that gets it every year. It doesn't seem like it's bothering my apple tree at all. And I live in close to campus in Stevens Point, where the houses are all on top of each other, so I'm sure there's juniper nearby. But if I didn't want to, for whatever reason, just absolutely did not want to deal with this anymore on my apple trees, what I'd need to do is remove all the junipers nearby, or vice versa. What you can do to reduce the infection from one year to the next is, again, that fall cleanup. So getting out there, raking up all the apple leaves. And as far as on your junipers, prune them out. You're going to go about 4 to 6 inches below where that little gall mass formed, and prune that. And make sure in between each pruning, you're cleaning it with a little bit of rubbing alcohol.
Mm. Okay. All right. Fascinating, though. Like, you've done it again, where this is something that 2 o'clock in the morning, you're going to be on a rabbit hole looking into this. Is it just interesting? Like, I don't think I've heard of one like that. And it also, like I said, I think I'm not alone. We've seen this before. So just kind of having the understanding of what that is that I've seen for so many years, and now I understand it a little better. Certainly, the knowledge of this stuff is so helpful to the community and to people in their everyday life, especially this time of year. But it's also just fascinating. It's also just kind of interesting, even if these things hopefully never affect any of your plant life or anything like that. I think it's just kind of cool to know.
Oh, yeah.
In general.
One of the things about gardening is it forces you to slow down and focus, right? I mean, that's where it becomes a mindfulness tool. And just like knowing that, you see these spots on an apple tree or a crab apple tree, and this is things, you know, like it takes two mm-hmm. different organisms and it slows you down and forces you to think about it. Same thing with like tar spot on maple trees, you know, when once you finally realize or you notice it, you won't be able to help but notice it all over the place.
We wanted to touch on some other ones, and one of the ones especially right now is a great, I think, one to hit on, winter injury and winter burn.
Yeah. So what happens here, and this is really your conifers, your evergreens that get this. And what happens is we probably had a beautiful fall the year before where it was nice and dry and sunny and beautiful and warm, and maybe even unseasonably warm or unseasonably late. And so the ground wasn't nice and saturated with moisture going into winter. And when as the tree made its way through wintertime, the westerly winds just basically pull the moisture right out of the plant. And oftentimes, we won't notice this winter burn happened until spring when the plant breaks dormancy. And that's when all of a sudden the effect of the winter burn becomes noticeable. So it could have been that this has been happening all winter long. But the browning effect doesn't happen until the plant basically wakes up again. So, what can you do about it?
Yeah.
You know, the best thing is going to be, there's not really anything you can do to fix it. This is more of but next time we have a beautiful fall, really be thinking about, ooh, I need to be watering my plants. I need to be watering and making sure everything gets at least an inch of water, at least until the ground freezes.
This time of year, one of the things that I think a lot of us are here, especially if you're watching the daily news or anything and the weather report, and the weatherman will usually tell you, okay, you want to bring your plants in, or you can leave them out or something like that. And mildew comes up, and that is another topic too. That while we've heard this word and this term a lot, I don't know, understanding what it actually is, I think, would go a long ways.
So if you have ever grown vining vegetables, cucumbers, squash, melons, or as far as like lilacs go, or even bee balm or phlox, all of those are kind of who I think of as the usual suspects. And if you've ever grown any of them and you've noticed that they get kind of a white film, like somebody sprinkled baby powder or cornstarch on the leaves, that's powdery mildew, right? And again, I was about to say not only cosmetic, but that's not true. It's really cosmetic to your trees and shrubs, even your perennials, your phlox and your bee balm. It's not going to kill them in a single year, but your annual vegetables, it definitely can do some damage. It could pretty much wipe out your yield. So for those guys, you probably a little bit more serious than it is for the perennial and woody plants. So what can we do about it? Well, with those vegetables, well, with everybody, it really comes down to just being aware that powdery mildew does best in really humid and dry environments. So anything that you can do to increase the airflow is going to be helpful. So proper plant spacing. If we're talking about perennials and your bee balm, you know, because bee balm can tend to be pretty thick. If your bee balm is getting pretty thick, go ahead and thin them out, you know, every few years. If we're talking about your vining vegetables, give them the proper spacing. Don't try to squeeze in extra cucumber plants together. You know, if you think that's going to increase your yield, it's not, because you're going to end up with less yield because you're going to have more disease, right? So properly space your plants. And those vining vegetables, if you can, get them up off the ground. Give them some sort of support so that way they can grow upwards. And then, you know, for everything, choosing resistant varieties. For everybody that I have talked about, the vining vegetables, the lilacs and the phlox and the bee balms, there are powdery mildew resistant varieties.
That's incredible information, as always, Janelle. Thank you for that. Janelle, as we're wrapping up, you had an event we wanted to touch on.
Yeah, so I'm super excited. This weekend is the Wood County Master Gardener Spring Plant Sale. So if you're familiar with the Port Edwards Village Rummage Sale, you're going to be able to find them right over there. They're going to be, so that's coming up this Saturday, May 17th, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. The plant sale is going to be at 930 Westport Drive. And they are going to have a little bit of everything. They've got some vegetable starter plants. They've got your annual flowers. And they've got, for new this year, some herb starter plants. Of course, you've got your perennials, succulents, tender bulbs. They've even got some house plants ready for you. And they've got some saved seed from last year for perennials, as well as a bake sale. You also have an opportunity, if you've got any questions that you've been wondering as far as gardening goes, they will have an Ask a Master Gardener booth set up. And they will also have the garden walk tickets on sale too. The garden walk is going to be July 19th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So you can catch them there and ask some questions about the garden walk too. Again, that's this Saturday, May 17th. They're going to be at 930 Westport Drive.
Do people need to register for this event, Janelle?
Oh, no. Nope. Oh. Part of the Port Edwards Village Rummage Sale.
Appreciate that. And as always, appreciate the time, Janelle. Looking forward to hanging out again real soon. That's going to be fun. We'll talk to you soon. And thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Reach out to Janelle and find out more by going to their website, extension.wisc.edu, extension.wisc.edu. And thank you so much for joining the conversation, everybody, here at WFHR's Rapids Report.